is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 5 after 1 on a beautiful Saturday afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us. We're available at email at nationradio@team1260.com, plus we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio, just ahead of a conversation with Kent Wilson from Flames Nation and other parts of Nation Express, I guess we'll call it. We just wanted to update you on a few things that happened this week. If you were out of town, I was for part of the week, and there was a lot going on. Ryan Whitney told us this week that he had a setback in his injury recovery a couple of weeks ago that resulted in swelling and soreness. Apparently, everything is still on track. He went to see a specialist, and he should be ready for the start of the season, but the beginning of training camp will tell us more. I think that's a huge item in the Oilers' season, because although the team did add Andy Sutton and Cam Barker to the blue line, Whitney is a huge, he's a 25, 27-minute guy for the defense. He can play in all three situations. For 11-12, he's huge, because these kids need another year of experience. Should he not be able to handle a big workload this season, then the Oilers have to either address that situation, or there's going to be a lot of L's hung on the defense, because there's just not enough there, I don't think, anyway. It's day 62 without any kind of answer for Colin Fraser. Can you believe that? The NHL should have made a decision and then made that decision public long before now. A guess would be that the league has already made a decision, and maybe they've even informed the Oilers and the Kings about it. But this issue continues to have an impact on at least one person, Colin Fraser. And I would think the NHLPA would be concerned about that. We're not that far away from training camp. And I know that he's injured and he'll be rehabbing and all of that stuff. But as a courtesy, and you know, the NHL is a fans league. I think it is. So I'm just wondering what the holdup is on, number one, making the, you know, having the hearing or whatever Gary Bettman has to do, and number two, making that decision public. Because if it's going to cost the Edmonton Oilers draft picks or players or whatever the case may be, then you know, the Edmonton Oilers and their fans have a right to know that. That's my feeling anyway. The Oilers hired Dwayne Sutter to the pro coaching staff this week. Now, his resume looks good. It's hard to tell for, you know, pro, you know, scouts. I mean, what does that mean? You know, pro scout, you know, I mean, you can, you know, advanced scout in baseball and that sort of thing. We know he probably spent some time looking at the other teams in the Northwest Division and maybe giving some input on trades and that sort of thing. But a Sutter? Am I the only guy who remembers the olden days when old man Sutter would drive in from Viking just to yell at Walter Gretzky? I mean, surely there's somebody out there who remembers this. Ah, good times. Anyway, a Sutter and the Oilers employee will work out just fine when we win the next Stanley. I hope that he you know, gets a ring and can wear it proudly as a member of the Edmonton Oilers organization. Now, we segue beautifully down the QE2 to Kent Wilson and Flames Nation. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. What can you tell me about Dwayne Sutter as a scout?
Nothing really. I mean, the issue with the Flames and the Sutters is we started to lose track of them at some point, because he was adding so many of his brothers that, I almost lost track of what their responsibilities were in the organization, to tell you the truth. I know Brent Sutter's the coach and Daryl Sutter was the GM, but after that he was adding Sutters and placing them in certain roles in the organization, and I don't really know what they were doing and what they can take credit for.
Now, you wrote a nice piece on Brent Sutter and how he's really emerging as a coach of this particular Calgary Flames team. Talk to us about how impressed you've been by how well he's improved as a coach of the Flames.
No, certainly. I mean, when he arrived, he made some errors when he first got here. He primarily had Olli Jokinen and Jerome Iginla playing together, and that was a bit of a failed experiment that carried over from the Mike Keenan days. Now, the other problem was he played them as if they were Zetterberg and Datsyuk, you know, two of the better Selke-caliber forwards in the league. He matched them against other powerful lines pretty hard. He had them starting in their own zone all the time, and it was just a disaster, because, you know, Jokinen, that's not his bag, and Jerome Iginla, as good as he is in the offensive zone, is mediocre at best defensively. So, you know, it was things like that, and then there was other indications that he was being controlled a bit from the despot up top, being his brother. When Steve Staios came over from the Edmonton Oilers, he was paired with Jay Bouwmeester in the Flames top four. And I probably don't have to tell you or other Edmonton Oilers fans how silly that was, because that was at, Steve Staios, at the point he was in his career, that was just not, that was well above his head. And then, you know, Ian White came into town, and he was paired with Robin Regier as the primary shutdown pairing. And it was just, you could see that, you know, Daryl Sutter was making moves and then instructing Brent to put them into certain situations that they probably weren't ideally suited for. So once Daryl was gone, Brent really started putting guys into places that made a lot more sense.
And I think on the defensive side of the puck, the Flames do have Giordano's an excellent defenseman. They have some good things even with Regier leaving, right?
Yeah, they sure do. I mean, Giordano's a great story. He worked his way up from undrafted player, and now he's certainly one of the core skaters on the team. Jay Bouwmeester, as much flack as he catches for his lackluster output and big contract, is still a very capable all-around defender. He eats up minutes pretty well. They have some prospects too on the blue line. They added Butler. It's certainly not devoid of talent, that's for sure.
I think with Bouwmeester, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's maybe miscast. People think that he's, you know, he can move the puck and he's a speed demon. He can absolutely skate and he's got size, and they expect him to be a guy who can post, you know, 50, 60 point seasons. But taking him for what he is, for what he can actually do, he's a very effective player.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you can forget about the $6.6 million contract, which admittedly is hard to do, and if you can get rid of the expectations of, you know, 15 goals or 50 points and just watch him play, he is an excellent defenseman. I mean, he's incredibly mobile. He doesn't run around hitting people a lot, which sort of annoys some parts of the fan base, but he's just effective at everything he does. He's quietly effective.
We're with Kent Wilson from Flames Nation and other parts as well. Let's talk a little bit about one of the things that I don't know if it frustrated me as a fan, but Jarrell McGinley is one of my favorite hockey players, and it seems as though since Conroy left, they tried him with Jar Jar Binks, they tried him with a lot of different people, not really getting anywhere. You wrote an article about David Moss possibly being in the middle this year. Is that something that you think can work?
It maybe. I mean, the funny thing with the Flames is they do have a lot of NHL centermen. They just don't have a lot of high-end NHL centermen. You know, Jokinen Lanko is a very good two-way guy, but he's 35 years old and probably isn't going to be putting up big offensive numbers. They have Michael Backlund, who's in his third season, has some skill, but isn't proven that he can play 15 to 20 minutes a night. Matt Stajan, who has been a bit of a disaster since he was re-signed, and then David Moss was actually tried out in the center last year by Sutter when I think it was after Morrison was hurt. And he played very well. It was actually a position he did in college, but he was shifted to wing as a professional just out of necessity, and he stuck there. But, he played between Tanguay and Ginla for maybe a week or so, and they put up good possession numbers, and their scoring chance ratios, by my count, were actually excellent as well. So it'll be interesting to see if Sutter tries that again.
One of the, I guess, ideal scenarios for the Flames is, you know, possibly playing Ginla in the role that is similar to what Anaheim has done with Timo Solani in the last few years, which is, you know, have him rip up the soft, you know, underbelly of the opposition. Are the Flames talented enough to do that?
Well, that's a good question, and to some degree, that's what they've been doing with Ginla the last few years. Now, Jarome is always going to be targeted to some degree by opposing coaches, so you can't give him too soft of minutes because someone is always going to try to get quality players out against Ginla. But that said, it's been 3 or 4 years since Jarome's been consistently matched by his own coach against other big-time players. That goes back even to Mike Keenan, who played at Ginla with Camilleri and had Lanko and Bork actually doing most of the hard-minute stuff. So he's sort of transitioning into that now. And the question is, are the Flames good? I mean, they don't really have any Selke sort of candidates like out in Vancouver where, you know, Vigneault has the Sedins starting pretty much every shift in the offensive zone, and then he puts out either Ryan Kessler or Manny Malhotra to take the defensive zone. faceoff. So, I mean, I really like the Flames' middle rotation, but I don't think they have anyone ideally suited to take on, you know, the very heavy hitters in the league, be it Datsyuk or Sidney Crosby.
One of the interesting items for the Flames, and I didn't notice this until I started looking at all the transactions from the Northwest teams, but excepting Vancouver, and I think we have to begrudgingly say that they're the class of the division.
Yeah.
The Flames are in a really good spot, right? Compared to the rest of the division?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, the Flames should be at least second in the Northwest if we look over things and be honest. And technically, they could try to push the Vancouver Canucks, although I don't think they're in their league. But, yeah, I mean, if Calgary gets any kind of goaltending next season, they can definitely push for a playoff spot and definitely second in the Northwest Division. One of the dirty secrets of last year was Kiprusoff just was actually below replacement level in terms of goaltending in the league. I mean, if they even get average goaltending from Kipper next season, I think the Flames could definitely move up.
Do they have a legitimate or obvious replacement for Regier?
Not really. I mean, they signed Scott Hannon to a one-year contract recently for $1 million, which was, I think, a great move by the team. They didn't have anyone who could definitely step up and take that role. There was a big gap in the top four left when Regier left. So, and that was one of my primary anxieties heading into the new season. Who is going to take this big spot in the lineup? And, I mean, Hannon, people can argue that he's not as good as Regier, and that may be true, but I mean, they're paying him only a quarter of what they paid Robin, so it looks like a good gamble to me.
I wanted to talk a little bit. One of when I was on holidays, I was reading all of the nation sites, and one of the things that I think went very well in terms of coverage and variety of coverage was the difficult story of Rick Rippon. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that a little bit about the depression issue, how it impacted not just, you know, the Vancouver Canucks and the family, but the entire hockey world, the fan base as well?
Well, it's interesting because what we're getting now is arguments and narratives about the violence in the game, specifically fighting and somewhat concussions and head hits, and the potential repercussions for players going forward. Now, the issue with Rippon is he had sort of a chronic depression issue before he headed into the league, so it's really difficult to draw a causative line, a bold line between, you know, what he did as a player, being, you know, a fighter, a tough guy, and what happened to him, depression and suicide. And it's something I plan to look at going forward here. I'm writing something for The Score. I'm talking to ex-Flames enforcer Brant Myers, who battled depression and substance abuse during his career. And actually, he won the battle, and he became a substance abuse counselor afterwards. He got a degree from it, from Mount Royal. So I plan to talk to him because he's been on both sides of the fence. You know, he's been an enforcer. He's battled some of the potential psychological issues that can be risk factors for that role. And he's seen, you know, other guys afterwards in his role as a substance abuse counselor. So it's the partisan issue is fighting or no fighting, and I think it's more complicated than that. So I'm going to try to get to Myers, research the issue, and see what are the risk factors here for these players.
And I think that the National Hockey League is somewhat unique in that this has always been a problem, and you know, going back a long, long time. But the idea of the enforcer, the guy who goes out and just does that, is a somewhat recent phenomenon. And this problem that you're addressing with regard to Rick Rippon has been going on for much longer than that. So it'll be interesting. I'll look forward to that coverage that you have. Let me ask you one final question on that, and it's outside the Rick Rippon scenario that you just mentioned. Do you think that the designated enforcer, as we now describe it, will be a part of the National Hockey League in 15 years?
No, that's a good question. I mean, for me, the way the role has evolved, I think you just referenced that. I mean, it used to be, you know, tough guys would go out and fight and protect players, but they were also, you know, hockey players. They go out and play 15 minutes a night, and it sort of evolved into the really big, hulking boxers who would only skate 2 or 3 minutes. And to some degree, you see that that's sort of being phased out of the game. Not every team is employing that kind of guy anymore. And it's maybe it's because of the change to the rules for instigating. Maybe it's because of the salary cap where GMs are being forced to be a lot more, you know, efficient with the use of their dollars. And to some degree, you see a lot of, you know, faster, smaller, younger guys getting put into the game, which is where, you know, it sort of forces these less than useful guys out. So if I had to guess, I would think if they're around, it's very, very limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we have 40 minutes left in the show, so try to keep it under 40 minutes, but where can we read you?
Well, I'm at Flames Nation, mostly. That's where I'm the managing editor. I pop up on some of the other Nation sites every so often when I have something to say. I'm at the Score blog, which is Houses of the Hockey, and I'm actually writing for Hockey Prospectus every so often, and we have an annual coming out, which I'm sort of concentrating on right now. So I've got 3,000 or 4,000 word essays that are going to be in there, too. So
excellent.
I'm everywhere.
Where can we get that? Because I'd love to read that.
Well, it's going to be the second iteration of the book. This one, I believe last year it was in major bookstores like, you know, Chapters Indigo. So I would imagine that's where it's going to pop up again.
Beautiful. Kent, thanks so much for this.
Thanks, Alan.
All right. Kent Wilson, you know what? He is an interesting cat. He definitely gets around on the internet because he has good stuff. He, as mentioned, he's obviously at the Flames Nations, but also the Score Hockey Prospectus. And you can catch him at KentWilson@gmail, and he's on Twitter as well. You can check that out and just go to Flames Nation. He's got some articles up over the last few days. 121, and coming up, we're going to talk to Jeff Crichel.